And it's 9 a.m. in the West Coast. It is 12 noon in the East Coast. And it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Today is January 30th, 2017. And this is Orly Benny Davis on BBS Radio with The Impossible Truth. Today, we want to thank Doug and Donald Newsom for the hard work they're doing to give the voice to the people. Their work is incredible. Their success is immense. And I'm so grateful to be on BBS Radio. Thank you all. Now, what we're going to do here is try to make sense of what's going on in the world of today. And, a new president, a new policy, a new deal. Let's listen in and try to figure out what is really going on. Let's listen.
My next guest worked on the presidential transition team on both foreign policy and homeland security right up until the inauguration. James Carafano with the Heritage Foundation joining me now from Washington with his perspective. Thank you so much for joining us here.
It's good to be with you.
I want to first ask you about some of the criticism that we're hearing. And what we just got a few moments ago is Senate Foreign Relations Chairman Bob Corker, who is a Republican, also criticizing the way that this executive order was implemented. He's calling for revisions to be made. And there has been a lot of confusion surrounding it. It seemed like Homeland Security, Border Patrol, even White House officials weren't really on the same page until, there was some more explanations. What do you make of this? And do you think changes should be made to this order and the way that it's implemented?
Well, I would say it's very hard to put one of these orders and for it to come out be frictionless, not affect anybody. As a matter of fact, Congress, I think it was last year, passed some additional restrictions on travel from these countries, and it created chaos as well. As a matter of fact, if you go back through the Obama and Bush administrations, every time we've done adjustments like this, it creates some confusion and some friction. What do you do about this individual case?
But usually during an executive order.
Thank you. If I could just finish my comment. Thank you.
Okay.
So the difference here is the amount of public attention that it's had. So look at a lot of Middle East countries, for example, are very concerned and have expressed concern. But look, they knew this was coming. And it was widely, so that's not a big deal. And I think what they're reacting to is that, as politicians always do, it's when the public gets upset, politicians feel they have to say something. So I think a lot of this is about politics, and very little of it's about actually the substantive of the order.
But what about policy? I mean, typically a president before an executive order will consult with specific departments in that expertise. And in this case, you have, again, Republican leaders, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, saying that this executive order perhaps was not properly vetted. There were no consultations with the Department of State, with the Department of Defense, Homeland Security. What do you say to that?
Well, that's a fair comment and a fair question. So I worked on the transition team. And what you have to understand is when you're on the transition team and when you're the president-elect, you don't run anything, and you can't tell the government to do anything. So there are real limits to the amount of coordination you can do before the election. I think after the election, I think the administration is kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot. On one thing, yeah, you would like to take as much time as you need to make sure that you've got as many things considered as you do before you roll something out. On the other hand, on January 20th, 2017, you are the president of the United States, and you're responsible. And if there's a terrorist attack on January 21st, the argument, well, I just used the same measures that the last president used, would be pretty weak. I think they looked at the emerging threat, they felt it was pretty severe, and they did a cost benefit. They did a risk assessment, and they said, we think it's more important to get out a procedure and get it out soon and be ahead of the threat than risk a terrorist attack, understanding that people might be inconvenienced. But I think you weigh the hardship about maybe somebody stuck in an airport or not know if they could get a flight against the potential of a terrorist attack and people mourning their dead relatives.
But you would say that White House officials, top aides to the president, should be very clear on this executive order that he was signing, right? I mean, just to give you an example, you had Reince Priebus, who's a White House chief of staff, who during an interview with NBC first said that the order doesn't affect green card holders, and then just moments later said, actually, of course it affects green card holders. So clearly, even the people closest to President Donald Trump weren't exactly clear how to implement this executive order. So you don't think this was poorly carried out?
No, I think that's actually a fair criticism. I think the administration bears the responsibility for explaining its policies. The purpose of the order was really to get ahead of an emergent threat. You have the area for ISIS being reduced, and as that area is reduced, the tens of thousands of foreign fighters that flowed into Iraq and Syria are going to flow somewhere. Everybody, not just the Americans, everybody thinks they're going to flow to these seven countries, and from there they could potentially launch terrorist attacks against the West, including the United States and Europe. Matter of fact, we've already seen that happen in Europe. So it was getting ahead of the threat. I think the administration, you know, could, but you know, they rolled out a lot of executive orders, and their priority was rolling them out rather than carefully choreographing each one. That's, well, I think a fair criticism.
And if I can jump in there about that threat you're talking about, if you could explain to us how these seven countries, you believe, or as you understand it, were chosen and why perhaps others were left out, like, say, a Saudi Arabia, which does have a history of exporting terrorism to the United States.
That's a great question. Of course, we've seen terrorists activity come out of our place, most famously the 9/11, or most infamously the 9/11, the attack against New York and Washington, was planned in Afghanistan. So the reason why these countries were chosen, I believe, is because if you look at the flow pattern of how foreign fighters flow into that country, and more importantly, what we believe now of how they flow out. So, for example, well, what about Turkey? Foreign fighters float into Turkey and float into Iraq and Syria. Why aren't they on the list? And I think the assessment is the countries that were picked are the countries where they're most likely to pour into. And Saudi Arabia is not one of them.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. James Carafano, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much for your perspective.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You got it. This is the best explanation to what is going on. So let me repeat it for you if you miss it. The new president, Donald J. Trump, just got the information that it's really, really risky to keep the border open for everybody, because now that they are stringing the frame on ISIS, they might flee to other countries, and those seven countries are the targets where they can flee, and they are afraid that they can take it to the next level. So to whoever thinks that emergency is not considered to be important task, and whoever thinks that inconvenience of our Arab friends is a hardship, well, tough. It's too tough, but we have to be considered to what's going on. America is going to have a new day. The new day means security, and you need to start from scratch. And the scratch is the door. When you have a flood, do you ask why it make a mess? It's a messy thing, and you need to fix it. Now he's fixing it. So stop hopping and buffing. It's impossible. We need to just stay put and do our best and understand that there is a plan. The plan is safeguards all the people of America and the rest of the world. Remember, American travel everywhere, and whoever, you know, you connect and you start thinking about what's going on, you're going to have a very, very clear picture that you need to be safe. And as Israeli, I can tell you that it's so important to have airport security in check, because it's going to be the only thing between you and them. And the harder it gets, sometimes it's harder for them to catch you, and it's better for everybody. And if everybody can implement, you know, the Halal kind of stuff or the Israeli kind of airport security, we're going to be safe all over the world. It's really ridiculous when you see people getting, you know, their, you know, handgun in the middle of airport just because they had it in the luggage. And then if something in Florida happens, we need to shake up our dormant stage and go to action. As Mike Pence said, buckle up. We start to work, and he's starting to work, and you see he's doing it. Of course, you know, the translation from a businessman to a politician is a little hard, but as somebody who speaks different languages and different culture, I can tell you that is on page one. He's doing his best, and he's going to be okay. And you guys are going to be okay. We are going to be okay. The world is turning the page on what we had. Enough. We need to go to do our best. And now we're going to start some music. And then afterwards, I hope that we're going to have my friend, my dear friend, Felix Azaria from Rome. Let's open. Let's listen to the music and have him online. We are back. This is Worley Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. We are trying to reach our friends in Italy. But meanwhile, let's keep on going. The refugees ban is not a ban. It's only a freeze on time, just until they adjust. They have like 90 days or 120 days. And we have some comments from a lot of politicians, like Trey Gowdy, that is saying, I'm committed to doing everything we can to keep Americans safe, just as I am committed to providing refuge to those fleeing persecution. So there you go. You have Trey Gowdy commenting on this, and he has a lot of the statement of the president. He has it online on Twitter. You can check it out. And then Jack Kinston, another congressman from Georgia, I think that is not longer a congressman, but he used to be. He said that in the first week of Obama administration, we had a cabinet of they approved 12 cabinet members. Now the Democrat only approved 4 senators. You know, it's really ridiculous. They have to get them working because the president needs his power to work. And more than ever, we had it, you know, when the Prime Minister of England came and they were talking about commerce and he was complaining that he doesn't have his commerce secretary approved yet. So he had to do it himself. So let's listen to what we had on that.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. President. And can I start by saying that I'm so pleased that I've been able to be here today. And thank you for inviting me so soon after your inauguration. And I'm delighted to be able to congratulate you on what was a stunning election victory. And as you say, the invitation is an indication of the strength and importance of the special relationship that exists between our two countries, a relationship based on the bonds of history, of family, kinship, and common interests. And in a further sign of the importance of that relationship, I have today been able to convey Her Majesty the Queen's hope that President Trump and the First Lady would pay a state visit to the United Kingdom later this year, and I'm delighted that the President has accepted that invitation. Now, today we're discussing a number of topics, and there's much on which we agree. The President has mentioned foreign policy. We're discussing how we can work even more closely together in order to take on and defeat Daesh and the ideology of Islamist extremism wherever it's found. Our two nations are already leading efforts to face up to this challenge, and we're making progress with Daesh losing territory and fighters, but we need to redouble our efforts. And today we're discussing how we can do this by deepening intelligence and security cooperation, and critically by stepping up our efforts to counter Daesh in cyberspace. Because we know we will not eradicate this threat until we defeat the idea, the ideology that lies behind it. Our talks will be continuing later. I'm sure we'll discuss other topics, Syria and Russia. On defence and security cooperation, we're united in our recognition of NATO as the bulwark of our collective defence, and today we've reaffirmed our unshakable commitment to this alliance. Mr. President, I think you said you confirmed that you're 100% behind NATO. But we're also discussing the importance of NATO continuing to ensure it is as equipped to fight terrorism and cyber warfare as it is to fight more conventional forms of war. And I've agreed to continue my efforts to encourage my fellow European leaders to deliver on their commitments to spend 2% of their GDP on defence so that the burden is more fairly shared. It's only by investing properly in our defence that we can ensure we're properly equipped to face our shared challenges together. And finally, the President and I have mentioned future economic cooperation and trade. Trade between our two countries is already worth over £150 billion a year. The US is the single biggest source of inward investment to the UK, and together we've around $1 trillion invested in each other's economies. And the UK-US defence relationship is the broadest, deepest, and most advanced of any two countries, sharing military hardware and expertise. And I think the President and I are ambitious to build on this relationship in order to grow our respective economies, provide the high-skilled, high-paid jobs of the future for working people across America and across the UK. And so we are discussing how we can establish a trade negotiation agreement, take forward immediate high-level talks, lay the groundwork for a UK-US trade agreement, and identify the practical steps we can take now in order to enable companies in both countries to trade and do business with one another more easily. And I'm convinced that a trade deal between the US and the UK is in the national interest of both countries and will cement the crucial relationship that exists between us, particularly as the UK leaves the European Union and reaches out to the world. Today's talks, I think, are a significant moment for President Trump and I to build our relationship, and I look forward to continuing to work with you as we deliver on the promises of freedom and prosperity for all the people of our respective countries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's very nicely stated. Steve Holland. Where's Steve? Steve, yes.
Thank you. You're going to be speaking tomorrow with the Russian president. Yes. What message would you like to convey to him? How close are you to lifting some of the sanctions imposed on Russia over its Ukraine incursion? What would you expect in return? And Prime Minister May, do you foresee any changes in British attitudes towards sanctions on Russia?
Well, I hear a call was set up, Steve, and we'll see what happens. As far as the sanctions, very early to be talking about that. But we look to have a great relationship with all countries, ideally. That won't necessarily happen. Unfortunately, probably won't happen with many countries. But if we can have, as we do with Prime Minister May and the relationship that we've all developed, and even in the short relationship that we've just developed just by being with each other, we're going to have lunch, and we've really had some very interesting talks and very productive talks. But if we can have a great relationship with Russia, and with China, and with all countries, I'm all for that. That would be a tremendous asset. No guarantees, but if we can, that would be a positive, not a negative. Okay?
We have, as far as the UK is concerned, on sanctions for Russia in relation to their activities in the Ukraine, we have been very clear that we want to see the Minsk agreement fully implemented. We believe the sanctions should continue until we see that Minsk agreement fully implemented, and we've been continuing to argue that inside the European Union. Okay. Laura?
Thank you very much, Prime Minister. Laura Kunzberg, BBC News. Prime Minister, you've talked about where you agree, but you have also said you would be frank where you disagree with the President. Can you tell us where in our talks you did disagree, and do you think that the President listened to what you had to say? And, Mr. President, you've said... we'll see what she says. Mr. President, you've said before that torture works. You've praised Russia. You've said you want to ban some Muslims from coming to America. You've suggested there should be punishment for abortion. For many people in Britain, those sound like alarming beliefs. What do you say to our viewers at home who are worried about some of your views and worried about you becoming the leader of the free world?
This was your choice of a question. There goes that relationship.
That you raised with me, Laura, can I confirm that the President, I've been listening to the President and the President has been listening to me. That's the point of having a conversation and a dialogue. And we have been discussing a number of topics. We'll carry on after this press conference meeting and discussing a number of other topics. And there will be times when we disagree and issues on which we disagree. The point of the special relationship is that we are able to have that open and frank discussion so that we are able to make that clear when it happens. But I'm clear also that there are many issues on which the United Kingdom and the United States stand alongside one another, many issues on which we agree. And I think, as I said yesterday in my speech, that we are at a moment now when we can build an even stronger special relationship, which will be in the interests not just of the UK and the United States, but actually in the interests of the wider world as well.
Very good. We have a great general who has just been appointed Secretary of Defense, General James Mattis. And he has stated publicly that he does not necessarily believe in torture or waterboarding, or however you want to define it. Enhanced interrogation, I guess, would be a word that a lot of people would like to use. I don't necessarily agree, but I would tell you that he will override because I'm giving him that power. He's an expert. He's highly respected. He's the general's general. Got through the Senate very, very quickly, which in this country is not easy, I will tell you. And so I'm going to rely on him. I happen to feel that it does work. I've been open about that for a long period of time. But I am going with our leaders. And we're going to win with or without. But I do disagree. As far as, again, Putin and Russia.
And we're back. That was the press conference between President Donald J. Trump and Prime Minister of England, Theresa May. They promise to be like Reagan and Thatcher. Well, maybe different. Because, you know, Thatcher and Reagan were really, really special and unique, but Mr. Trump is definitely outstanding. And Theresa May, wow, she kept up with him. It was amazing to see that incredible balance of power. You see, when you come from England, you have the queen in charge. And she runs the show still to this day. And I can tell you how much I respect her. And all what the work, the hard work that the English people did. And of course, they are, you know, low and high. And the fact that they are, you know, pulling out of the European Union, it's incredible. But for them to start Brexit, they need to go to the parliament. So I don't really understand how the Supreme Court really work in that matter, because if you have forum that the public decided to get out of the European Union, in order for you to trigger Article 50, you need to go to the parliament. You know, aren't they, you know, conducive to do the same thing? It's like you are stopping the will of the public. And, you know, let me say it, and I'm saying it with all respect. Right now, with the shifting of balance of power and the new adjustment to world order, whatever they call it, I don't know, because for me it's the same thing all over again, but they are, you know, they're pushing that it's a new world order. Okay, fine. The courts become, in this matter, they become more forceful. And maybe it's rightful that they do, because if you have a shift of something, you need to have justice always in balance. And I guess that if you can see it in one country, in this next, America, England, in Israel, and I'm sure that in the other countries too, if they're going out of their way to emphasize the need of order, it means that it's radically, and there is a radical change all over. And I'm not sure where the balance of power is actually going to stop, but right now there is a big, big strain of power on every government in the world that I can tell you about. As far as I'm concerned, I understand that, you know, we're going to, in America, they're going to vote in Supreme Court incredible new public figure that the president is going to decide on. The list is incredible, I heard. I heard that they're all outstanding, and I really, really pray that they're going to be incredible, because when Justice Scalia left us all, it was really heartbreaking for everybody, because it was a major league. It was incredible, and God bless his soul, I'm telling you. I remember how hard he fought. And think about it, you know, to have a justice like this coming out, and you can actually recognize his name, see him sometimes and listen to him, and, you know, it's so vivid in my mind that that it means that his work was really outstanding. I know that there were questions about his death, and I know that it's something that we need to always, always think about if there is any clue to what was really going on. I'm not saying anything, but, you know, if he's still alive in our mind like this vivid, something is gonna get out. There is no question about it. I know. Because it's like calling. Well, whatever that means. Anyway, let's wait to my friend, if he's still in Rome, if he can connect with the BBS radio station. One will be happy to. If not, you can see it online. Felix, you can call us in too. Now, I have some order of the day. I got a new friend that I met in the convention of the Likud party. You have to understand, this weekend we all ended up in the very south shore of Israel in Eilat. It's a beach area where everybody is like supposed to have fun. It was raining, so no sunbathing or anything. But it was a conference of the Likud party and all the major league players, right? And some ministers and member of the Knesset were there, and the head of the coalition. So it was supposed to be the powerhouse of the day. And I ended up going back to my room listening to the GOP retreat, because I felt like going back to my friends there, because I have so many Republican friends. I felt like I'm missing the big deal. And it was a big deal, because Donald Trump was incredible there. His speech was outstanding. I really liked this guy, I'm telling you. But he fights so hard. His heart is so hard. I guess that the more the softer you are, the harder you fight. That's how it works most of the time. So we need to really cherish him better. We need to respect and give him some honor that he deserves, because he arrived there from out of the game, and he made it. Big time winner. Let's not question about it. And the fact that the Russian government actually embedded a coin of $10,000 on his honor, I think it's amazing. It's respectful. And I know that this Monday, we have the King of Jordan is coming to Washington to take it by storm. But he's going to find the Mr. President Trump in the middle of a refugee crisis. Maybe we can start talking sense to the Jordanian. And when I say sense, it's about the heart of the matter. And if you leave everything aside, and if you decide one day, let's make real peace with our neighbor, or with our brother in the other side of the Jordan River, our Israeli brothers. We are brothers. You know, Abraham was our, you know, patriarch. Everybody knows that. If you think that we need to come to a new fresh start of peace, let's ask why we cannot pray on Temple Mount. And it's really basic. because the vision of peace, it means that we're going to have incredible relationship with God. It means that you're going to have peaceful coexistence. And that's the ultimate test of the world, is to live side by side, right? Isn't it true? Isn't it true that peace means that you live and you let live? Now, you know, the Islam has a responsibility to bear. And the fact that they're all, you know, struggling right now with the new ban, we have a lot of Jewish friends that have a passport and they were born in Iran, for example. Like, you have a big community in Los Angeles that they all born, you know, they refugees from Iran, and they cannot go home. And there are people, they're Jewish, they're not, you know, they have family. They left when the Shah was kicked, you know, when the revolution, you remember in the 80s that there was a revolution in Iran? They flee. So we understand. We'll go back on the Iranian deal because they made some kind of very bold movement this afternoon in Israel, you know, in Iran, but Israel time, it's afternoon. But, and we go to Jordan again, saying that if they want to live side by side, and it's not the Jordan River, it's only geographically separating us. We need to realize that the Palestinian land it's not Palestine, it's Palestine, it's not Palestinian. There weren't any people called Palestinian. The Philistine was in Gaza, were in the Bible, but they are not that. Okay, they are saying that they're not there. Assuming that if they are Philistine, they're from Gaza, and Gaza is theirs now, and there is a terror organization dealing with them there. But Jordan, they have the audacity, and I'm saying it frank. And you know, whoever listened, I don't know, maybe the half a person who listened to me, we need to come clear. We know for a fact that the Jordanian give the Palestinian refugees, the people from Palestine, Arab, that were in the, you know, the, after the creation of the State of Israel, they gave them citizenship. So they're all Jordanian, you know, by identity. They're not refugees. So if you talk about Judea and Samaria, calling the West Bank or the East Bank, as they call it, it's all lived with people that have, you know, title in Jordan. So why we are custom fake it by saying they are refugee, we have to fix it, we are, have a Palestinian problem, when you know for a fact that you gave them already house in Jordan. And you know that 70% of Jordanian are Palestinian. And you know that the queen, you know, married to the king, is Palestinian. So why we have all this fake negotiation that Mr. Clinton was pursuing hardly and get us into a bloodshed of consequence, you know, with a peace accord, with an Oslo accord, with a rioting of 7 years, with thousands of dead. When you have a Palestinian, for the Palestinian people, Jordan is their land, and it's organized because they don't know to organize else. They know to do, you know, to do terror. That's what they teach them. For some reason, they are using them as to shrink the power, or, you know, to get to fight Israel. Let's say it clear. So the Jordanian, they are very bold. You don't want us to have the Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. Jerusalem is the capital of Israel from 3,000 years ago, from the time of the kingdom of David. David actually honored Jerusalem, David and King Solomon built the temple, there was a second temple too. It's like not even a question. It was 600 years of temple. It wasn't history that you can excavate. I'm questioning the legality, and let me say it, the legality of Jordan to be. And why is that? You know, in San Remo conference in 1923, there was a settlement to give the Jewish people the land of Palestine as their home. Okay, and that was included Jordan too in the map. For some reason, the mandate of Palestine in the British Empire have that I love. Hey, I love Prince Harry. Please, don't ever question my you know true friendship. We have a really really important issue though. Okay, let's settle it. This year, we're celebrating 100 years of the Balfour Declaration, 1917 to 2017, 100 years. That says that in the land of Palestine, then, the land, the territory, and we're going to have a home for the Jewish people. 23, they got demanded. The British got demanded on the land. For some reason, in 1933, or after that, the British decided to give a part of it to the Hashemite kingdom after they deal with the Saudis. Now, we don't know under what right they had to cut the land in two, giving the major part to Jordan. And, you know, it's all the show that they run, like the entitled, when actually the mandate to Palestine was for the Jewish people and England. Under that mandate, there was actually a closure, number 5, if I am correct, that says you are not by any means can give any part of the land to any other entity but the Jewish people in the mandate to Palestine that was given to them. Go there, check it out. I studied it hard for years. That's why I can spill it all by heart. Because I've been there over and over and over again thinking, how come Jordan actually has the right to be on the Palestinian territory, not Palestinian territory, Palestinian, the Palestine, when it was the homeland of the Jewish people? Now think, the Jewish people in the meanwhile, 1939, had all Holocaust. You know, God has a very, very strange way to push some people around. You know, you got it in 23 if you don't push back, and they push it by force. 39, we have the Second World War, and we had the Holocaust. Until 45, there was no worse time for the Jewish people. It was horrible. And on Friday, we had the International Day of Holocaust that we remember. And we have to recognize that it was heartbreaking, but it geared all the Jewish people to move to Israel and start creating a nation. And sure enough, in 1948, there was created after the United Nations, that was before League of Nations, decided in 181 to give. But they decided to cut it, okay? They decided to cut it. And Jordan was created, of course, Transjordanian then. So from all there, we're coming to the fact that Jerusalem under 181 was international. It means that they decided that Jerusalem, I don't know what they were thinking, but as they think that, you know, there is no holy places for the Jewish people, because the major part of them are from Islam states, so they don't recognize Judaism as a religion, because all the rest are infidels, you know, if they are not from the Islam. And I'm really respectful for the Islamic people, but they don't have respect for my religion. And it's about time to call it quits. It's about time they understand that when you talk about God, When the Saudis says, you know, you can do everything, but it doesn't until they come to God and security, this is it. This is God Almighty in Jerusalem, Zion. And you can call me Zionist. I don't know why the people think of that Zionism, that it's the name of Jerusalem, is a dirty name. I dare them. But talk to yourself and think, if the Bible survived 2,000 years and it's still the most popular book in the world, it has the Holy Scripture, and the Judeo-Christian exists with the faith. For some reason, the Islam that came after, you know, it came after the Christianity, even the Judaism is the base, then Christianity, then Islam. And they decide, no, all the rest is nonsense. It's like, a son that come from a house and then decide, he wants a different color. Fine, not a problem. Do whatever you want. But let us be. You cannot stop being. Let us be who we are, the people of God. We have the title with a book. You guys have your own book. Fine. I don't care. But the fact that they fight us on Jerusalem is the most outrageous proposition. And for the king to come to try to stop America, the president, from moving the embassy, recognize Israel title on Jerusalem, is the audacity that only God Almighty can play a role here. Because I'm serious. I cannot convince people to understand my faith. I just want them to let us be. And for some reason, they think that they allowed for so many years, so many ages, to push the Jewish people around like nothing. And right now, you have Israel marked as the 8th most powerful nation in the world. 8th, Israel. Is, you know how tiny Israel is? They took Jordan took a half. Then what they're doing there? I think I said enough. I said Jerusalem is a holy city for the world, and we are the custodian. So this is the custody that we inherited. This is our rightful city to carry for God. And we want everybody to come, and they're all welcome. And we want them a open heart, and we want to work together. But one day there will be a temple there, and they all will come and play and write and read and sing for God. And that will be the day where we actually say that there is a peace in Jerusalem. Let's get some music and we'll be back after that. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. Guys, it's amazing time in history. And you have to keep up with everything because everybody is taking a place. We have here some news that there is a new UAE food bank that is a part of a year of giving, which is going to instill benevolence of the heart of our people. Their people, they're going to have the food bank. Thank God, because somebody has to pick up the glove and do it. And they did. So I'm cheering for them because the world needs food. And you guys, I know that you're in the other part of, the spectrum as far as peace accord with Israel, but you'll come along. We're all friends. In the back, we're all talking, and then, in the front, we need to keep a hard face, but it's not going to last forever. It's going to change. Now, the World Trade Organization is happy to welcome Lumiere, Pascal Lamy. It's mean we have a new order in the World Trade Organization. Hallelujah. They are going to have a symposium in June 7, 6 and 7 in 2017. This is great news, guys, because what is going to happen? We're going to finally talk about reorganization of all the world trade. Remember what I was talking to? I've been talking about it since 2003 when I ran for Senate. I've been talking about a Center for Information for Commerce. We need to include everybody on one page. It means a portal for every country to come and do commerce in the world, global world. And it's really easy to think about it because every country can do its shares, you know, do process, and then we're going to do global. But I'm not going to give it all to you free and thing. If you want, you invite me to talk. I'll be a guest on that show if you want. We cannot really. We have to go on early. Time up. Okay, guys, we have some new data about the new agreement with England, and I want you to listen to Nigel Farage.
Got some breaking news right now. There will be a historic visit today at the White House. In a matter of hours, British Prime Minister Theresa May will become the first foreign leader to meet with President Trump in the Oval Office. They'll have a press conference as well. At a Republican retreat just yesterday, the British Prime Minister saying that she stands shoulder to shoulder with President Trump.
President Trump's victory, achieved in defiance of all the pundits and the polls, and rooted not in the corridors of Washington, but in the hopes and aspirations of working men and women across this land. Your party's victory in both the Congress and the Senate, where you swept all before you, secured with great effort and achieved with an important message of national renewal.
Okay, so Nigel Farage is a member of the British Independence Party in the European Parliament, also a Fox News contributor by London Today. And sir, good day to you, and thanks for coming
good
back.
Good day.
Twice in 1 week, and today is probably the most significant day. I have several questions for you. Let's see how much we can move through here. I thought her best line yesterday, a newly emboldened, confident America is good for the world. That's something that we explored during this campaign. Did that strike you, Nigel?
Yeah, it did, because I think actually under 8 years of Obama, America's global reputation declined significantly. And I think that Theresa May, I mean, I've never heard Theresa May speak the way she did yesterday. I mean,
really?
I've been a political opponent of hers for years, and I thought that the things that she said about the relationship between our two countries and how we should deal with the world, it really was quite inspiring stuff.
You say you have not heard her speak that way before? What was different?
What was different was, I mean, Theresa, don't forget, Theresa May, voted against Brexit. She wanted Britain to stay part of the EU. She was pretty critical of Donald Trump during his campaign. And this was a British Prime Minister realizing that because we voted for Brexit, we're now free to start making our own friendships on our own trade deals around the world. And I would say she grabbed that opportunity with both hands.
That's
so I thought it was a very positive performance.
Very interesting. She was Brahmin, and now she has been transformed. Here's my sense. We are just getting to know your prime minister based on her speech from yesterday, and we're learning more about her and what she cares about, what's important to her, and the amount of vigor that she brings to her presentation. I would argue the same is true for President Trump and the people in the UK and all over Europe for that matter. Yeah, you heard about him during the campaign, but now his words carry much more weight. So then, how is he being received, Nigel?
Well, let me tell you that during the election campaign itself, virtually every media outlet and virtually everybody in politics and current affairs, I think I was the only person who was supporting Trump, at least that's what it felt like. So he starts off in a low place with British public opinion, but I think this week has changed things. I mean, what we've seen since Monday, frankly, is almost like a tsunami, isn't it? With executive orders being signed, with, you know, big changes of policy direction. And I think, you know, now we're Friday, what I'm kind of picking up is people are saying, wow, this guy gets on and does things. So I would say a week in to the Trump presidency, his popularity is rising a little bit. And if we see tonight or this afternoon, your time, a press conference, you know, with a British prime minister and a US president, where he makes it clear that he is absolutely sincere about rebuilding this relationship between our two great nations, then I think his popularity will rise further.
I think that's what you're going to find. Is she taking heat back home for what she said?
I said to you, virtually everybody condemned Trump during the campaign. They're now having to begin to live with the reality. The thing that's really upset people were his comments about torture. A lot of people, certainly on the centre and the left in British politics, did not like that. But I think, to be honest with you, you know, what Trump said is he would be in favour, but it was up to Pompeo, it was up to Mattis. Mattis has said it doesn't work, so we can forget that, I think, really.
Mm. Newt Gingrich wrote this. Are you ready? Quote,
yep.
It is a good time to consider that Margaret Thatcher, much more than Ronald Reagan, is the real model for the Trump presidency. Have you thought about that? Can you define that so far?
Amazing. Well, I guess Thatcher was a radical, and I would say to you that Thatcher in the early days was hated more by the establishment in the UK probably than Reagan was in America. I mean, I know that Ronnie Reagan took some stick in America, but literally everybody hated Thatcher here, because what she did is she took our policy direction in many areas and she turned it round by 180 degrees. And in a sense, that's what Trump's doing too, isn't it? There are many areas of government policy here in which America is now headed in a completely different direction, and I would guess that's what Newt Gingrich means.
A fascinating analysis. Thank you, sir. We're waiting your prime minister at the White House coming up later this morning. Nigel Farage from London. Good to have you back. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. You know, Nigel Farage become to be a really top-notch thingy. I really, really appreciate his thought and kind of consider his opinion all the time, because he's so truthful and he's candid and he speaks to the heart, and he's having his own show now. You know, you can find him on YouTube. He has a lot of videos put in that he actually give his time and talk to the world, and it's really nice, because I think that all the opinion of everybody needs to play a major role right now when we start to adjusting it to a new world, when we are starting to fix the world. It's not because it's a new world, it's because they destroyed so much. And in Syria, we hope that it's going to be okay, but we heard that Assad was in the hospital today. And he got released. I don't know if he got released in full shape, but he was in the hospital. So if there is some kind of a medical emergency there, I don't know who's going to take over. And we need to make sure that we have our ideas clear about what's going to happen, because those people suffer enough. And there are a lot of refugees that need to be resettled back. And Iraq is still not sure, you know. And for some reason, they took it very hard that Donald Trump stopped people from Iraq, and they decided that they are not going to let American in. Yeah, really. It's really, sometimes you have to be real. I'm not laughing at them. They've been through a hardship. But anyway, let's go back. We have a song to put. And it's a song to my new friend that I found in, the new Likud party kind of thing. It's a kind heart that I appreciate. And people, sometimes when you find a special soul, you need to recognize it. And you have to remember that God make wonder. And sometimes he put people in your life or to influence them, to give them blessing. And also share some thought, and maybe, have some fun if you're young or if you want looking for other thing. But the idea is to keep your heart open and be a blessing to the world. So this is dedicated to my friend, my new friend.
To waste time with the masterpiece. You should be rolling with me. You should be rolling with me. You're a real life fantasy. You're a real life fantasy. But you're moving so carefully. Let's start.
Time flies so fast when you're having fun. Guys, bless you all. I pray for everybody. I pray for everybody in the world to come to their senses and get their act together. And may God bless you all. Please bring peace, happiness, prosperity, a lot of joys, and give some kids hope and education. We need it. I forgot to say something that happened today. This afternoon, Iran launched a ballistic missile, and they were trying, and despite the United Nations. So we need to call Iran to order. But we need to call Iran to order for the inspection and transparency closure that we have in the agreement. You know, inspector will have access to supply chain and support Iran nuclear program. The new transparency and inspection mechanism will closely monitor material and components to prevent diversion to a secret program. Inspector will have access to uranium mines and continuous surveillance at uranium mines where Iran produced yellow cake for 25 years. I can go on and on. We need to inspect. We need to send inspector there to Iran. You want to send missile? We start squeezing in what we can, and this is in the contract. So let's hope that they sign it with disclosure. All right. So didn't forget to turn the page on them too. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.